RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Dr. Alec Foster is portfolio lead of bioproducts at Scion. And in his role, Alec has hands-on knowledge of working with New Zealand companies to create, manufacture and use bioproducts. Before joining the team there, he led one of Europe's largest synthetic biology programs, developing new materials with genetically engineered microorganisms. With more than 40 patents and experience with world-leading biotech companies, Alec is bringing to Scion, they tell us, a unique insight into the science, materials and technologies of the future. And he joins us on RCR. Dr. Foster, welcome in.
Happy to be here.
Okay, so tell us exactly what you do first.
Oh, yes. So I look after product development at Scion. So different bioproducts, looking at ways of reducing our reliance on oil-based materials.
Right.
So whether it's plastics, those sorts of things.
And that is to limit the use of those products, what, for environmental reasons?
Principally environmental reasons, yes. So looking for ones that can add value to our waste, our primary industries, at the same time as protecting the environment.
And what sort of materials are you developing as what eventual replacements, I guess you're thinking?
Yes, so we're making things like bioplastics from carbon dioxide. We're making packaging. We're making various sorts of chemicals that can be used in agriculture.
Okay. How big's the market, Alec?
Oh, it's huge. Oil-based plastics dominate, and it's worth billions of dollars in New Zealand.
Okay. So this is something we should be in for the future of our industry and our technology and first world country stuff. Is that a way to define it?
Absolutely. And I think New Zealand doesn't really have a choice. If we want to be able to access different markets from around the world, we need to be able to have the materials to be able to export to those markets.
Okay. So give us, again, an insight into how you go about that. I mean, you said, what did you tell us? Something out of carbon dioxide, was it?
Carbon dioxide,
how
yes.
Does that
so,
work?
In effect, bacteria like to grow in a fermenter, a bit like brewing beer. And we can feed bacteria carbon dioxide, we can feed them methane, and they metabolize it into things which are polymers. And polymers are pretty much the same thing as plastics.
Okay. So that's kind of nature doing work, is it?
Exactly. It's leveraging what nature naturally does and tapping into that to make products.
Doing that at scale, though, Alec, is that next level? I can see that in a lab, but you know, industrial processes and the just the quantum of material needed to replace plastic bottles, an example, would be huge, wouldn't it?
It is huge, and it's a big, big challenge because oil-based industries have had 100 years to optimize their process. We're doing it over the last 10 or 20. However, bioplastics are now taking up about 3% of the market, and the US is aiming to have around 90% of all plastics being bioplastic by, I think it's 2050.
Obviously, we've had quite a debate about the government's attitude to GE deregulation, let's call it that.
Yeah.
Should people have, is there anything to be afraid of, scared of there?
No. I think there's a lot of issues around perceived risk and actual risk when it comes to genetic modification. We've, for a long time, been using GE products in New Zealand as well for the last 30-odd years.
And can you give us some examples, Alec, of those products?
Oh,
can you?
Yes. So insulin is a prime example. So insulin, that's effectively putting in the human gene into bacteria to make insulin. We used to derive it from pigs, but now we get bacteria to do it in a fermenter. But
I didn't even realize that. I remember the pigs thing, but I didn't know it had been had come that far since then.
Absolutely. And it's everything from our cheese making through to enzymes in our laundry detergent, soya milk, cotton. Numerous things that we use every day are derived from genetic engineering. So it's part of our everyday lives.
At a philosophical level, again, many of our listeners will think this way. Is it playing with nature? Is it tinkering with nature? Should we be doing that, do you think, philosophically?
I think humans have always tinkered with nature. So if you go back and look at what an apple looks like, what a watermelon looked like, even just 200-300 years, it looks vastly different to what we've got on our supermarket shelf.
Right.
So a watermelon would be the size of a berry or an apple.
Oh, back then?
Back then.
Okay.
It's all transformed right. massively. And if you go to a supermarket today, you can buy a red grapefruit as a great example. And that will be sold as organic.
Yeah.
However, that was created in the 1960s, 1970s, by shooting radiation at it to give it its red color.
Okay, you learn stuff all the time. But is that genetic engineering, or is that just sort of like breeding, selective breeding principles? Not necessarily editing, and we'll get to that, editing things to, you know, make new things.
Well, that's called random mutagenesis. Now, that's allowed. That's not considered gene editing or genetic engineering. But if it was a technology developed today, it would have been considered.
Right. Okay, I see. Yeah. Why does this need to come out of the lab now?
Principally because it's stifling innovation for New Zealand. We tend to talk, if we look at artificial intelligence today and how that's disrupting numerous sectors, the biotechnology and genetic engineering is what's going to be the next technology that's going to disrupt numerous sectors across the world. The price has come down orders of magnitude, and there are numerous products being developed, and we can't take advantage of it. You know, New Zealand could be really cool in this space because we're really good at our primary industries. However, none of our sectors can take advantage of the benefits, whether it's utilizing waste, whether it's developing new and different products. And we're stuck developing products we did 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And we could be developing a wide range of high-value products. And we've lost companies from New Zealand.
Right.
So LanzaTech is a brilliant example. So that is a multi-billion dollar company that came out of New Zealand, and they were converting carbon dioxide into byproducts. They left New Zealand because of the GMO legislation. They're on record as saying that that was one of the primary barriers and why they had to leave. So billions lost in New Zealand.
How competitive as a small country could we be in this globally?
Very competitive, because one of the things that New Zealand does really, really well is making biomass. And whether it's agriculture, whether it's forestry, that's our key advantage. However, to actually make a lot of byproducts, what you need is that biomass. So being able to take the waste of dairy industry, forestry industry, and convert it into products. So we could be world leaders in this space if we were able to tap into it.
What are the things that we have to be aware of, though? Let's say it's all go, mate. It's all go. Go for it. Get out of the lab. Do your thing. Surely there are downsides and risks as well that have to be considered. What, in your mind, are they?
I think really the biggest risk is associated with perceptions. So genetic engineering, it has a bad image. People tend to think of Jurassic Park, X-Men, what they've seen in the movies, and that doesn't align with reality. So there's helping people understand that it is beneficial, and I think there's the real risk of a negative public perception around this area. So,
where do you think that's come from, Alec, that perception?
I think it's largely come from a lack of understanding of where things actually come from, and people don't actually understand that it's already part of our daily lives. So I think most people don't realize that they're eating, they're wearing, they're using the products of genetic engineering today. If you ask most Kiwis, they would say New Zealand's GE-free. But the fact is, we import everything, but we just don't make it here.
Right, okay.
And that's a key difference. And I think if people actually understood that, and if they understood many of the technologies that we've used of yesteryear are actually far more risky than what we use today, they would be less concerned.
But there has to be consideration, especially in the plant world, of cross-pollination risk and contamination. And also there's quite an organics industry and a perception coming out of New Zealand, which could grow also. Do you think the two can exist together without sort of risking each other in any sort of way?
I think they can live side by side. If you look at the biggest countries which have a organics industry, the US in particular, those industries live side by side with one another. And I think I gave an example of the grapefruit before, where it's got that red flesh. Today, that is a product that is actually sold as organic. You can go to your local supermarket right. in New Zealand, and it's sold as an organic.
So the things can sort of merge together over time, is what you're
exactly.
saying. Yeah, okay. What happens if this deregulation doesn't happen? What happens if it doesn't go that way in your mind?
I think New Zealand will fall behind, and I think it's going to fall quite far behind, actually, in a number of sectors. You know, we look at things like the energy crisis, which is occurring at the moment with our mills. Now, if we were able to use biotechnology, we could actually be far more efficient. We wouldn't require as much energy input. So we're going to become more and more less competitive with the rest of the world. And that's where we need to be. We need to be as making better products, be more economical than our competitors. And I think if we don't adopt, there's all kinds of risks, and not just in terms of productivity and industry. I think there's also the healthcare side, because.
Tell me what you're thinking there.
Well, there are so many different innovations which are occurring in medicine. There's a great example at NHS. There was a girl with incurable leukemia. All other treatments had failed, which effectively meant that she had months or a few years to live. She's right. been cured using genetic
cured
using genetic technologies.
Okay, how? I mean, you need all day to really explain, but just give us a brief how that happens.
It's a CAR T cell therapy, so it's a type of targeted medicine approach where they actually understand what are the key characteristics in that patient, and they can make the medicine target the impacted cells.
Okay. And so it actually worked.
It worked. So, a fantastic example. And I think most Kiwis would say, if they had a child with leukemia, absolutely they would want the,
well, yeah, you'd take anything that was going, for sure.
Exactly.
I noticed I mentioned patents early on when I was introducing you.
Yeah.
And there is thinking that, you know, with respect to people like yourself doing what you do, that there is this sort of chasing patents kind of thing, you know, and sort of almost follow the money. How motivated by that are you? Or is it more just pure research that sort of gets you going?
Well, if I'm honest, that was something that was really quite important to me earlier on in my career. And actually, one of the big motivations for me coming to New Zealand was that I actually wanted to move away from that and actually see my inventions go into the public. And I understand that there has been a number of concerns around patents and genetic technologies.
Yep.
Now, one of the big issues is that the legislation has effectively created barriers. So only those with multi-millions could actually develop a product.
Which holds people like yourself back, is what you're saying.
Exactly. So by deregulating, it actually enables the smaller players now to be able to bring up the impact, to actually bring the benefits to a country like New Zealand.
And does that mean that that's more sort of diversity of invention than unlocked?
Exactly, yes. So a lot more diversity of invention, a lot more opportunities, and it really plays to the strengths of a country like New Zealand rather than what it has been previously, where it's been the big corporations, say in the US.
What got you interested in this field, Alec? I'm fascinated to know, because everybody has a thing. What got you into this?
To be honest, I loved the movies and books as a kid, whether it's Jurassic Park, X-Men, all of that sort of stuff. I really enjoyed being able to the science fiction associated with it.
Okay. Yeah.
And I always kind of wanted to make the world a better place, and I kind of thought this is the best way of doing it.
And what's your attitude to nature? Because it is so complex, isn't it? It really is. Like, mind-blowingly complex.
Yes. Well, fundamentally, I see the biggest issue worldwide is the climate change issue that we've got. So we've got a number of targets. You know, all these companies say net zero by 2050. However, they don't really have any idea how they're going to get there.
So there's the opportunity right there.
That's the opportunity. And that's principally why most countries around the world are changing their regulations, because they recognize that biotech is a key mechanism.
Some could argue, Alec, because, you know, it's in our audience particularly, this is a very debatable point as to how much of a crisis or emergency or threat this is. And it would be fair to say that you could use the argument that we're talking about now, and that is climate, as a sort of a way of prizing open the opportunities to do stuff that doesn't necessarily benefit climate, but allows, you know, development of gene technologies, using CRISPR, doing incredible modification and sort of mimicking nature. What's your response to me raising that point?
Well, what I would say is, even if you believe that is true, that New Zealand still needs to be able to access different markets around the world. And nations will put in tariffs associated with carbon. So the EU is already doing this, and this is going to happen worldwide. And New Zealand needs to be able to access those markets with lower carbon. I would also say that even if you do not believe in climate change, most people acknowledge things like our waterways in terms of pollution in our waterways. We can avoid things like fertilizers and pesticides, which is a good thing for our waterways. So we can be better for the environment. So I think there's different arguments that we can have in terms of whether it's economic benefits, whether it's access. It's not just simply meeting our 2050 targets.
Gotcha. Okay, last question, Alec. What's Alec's next big invention? What's the next most exciting thing to do?
At the moment, we are looking at turning geothermal gases into various types of bioplastic.
Okay.
And we're hoping to develop 5 or 6 within the next year.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Dr. Alec Foster, Portfolio Lead at Bioproducts for Scion, thanks for coming on and telling us what you do and answering our questions. We appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.